to introduce some guests we have tonight. Most of you know them, and some of our board members. Salim from Carmel, California. Patsia from Peterborough, Ontario.
Newmarket,
Ontario, excuse me. Hadin from Portland, Oregon. Rahima from Madison, Wisconsin. And nice to see you, Holly. Nice to have you with us. And Alhamdulillah. I've been away for a while. I came back with some respiratory issues from picked up in Delhi. There are things in Delhi that no one should have to breathe. I'm not worried about myself, but be tough for people living there full time. I actually had an email today from somebody from Bangladesh, and the email said, "This is not a healthy place. Can you help me leave? I want to follow the way of Mevlana, but I also need to be someplace that's healthy." Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I've seen many people come back from some places in Asia and with very similar issues. It'll pass. It's not a big deal, but just a little bit uncomfortable, and sometimes I'm not hearing very well, and sometimes my lungs have been clogged up. So, but happy to see everyone. I missed you. Part of the happiness of the Sufi path that we have the friendships we have, and that we can sit in silence as we just did, so that we can slow down and be the silent together. And whatever you experienced in this half hour or so is your experience. Nobody here is trying to shape your beliefs or your experience. That really is left to you. Yeah, we have some things we try to share, you know, from our teachers and from our tradition, mostly in the realm of methodology. Without some methodology, you could say we would be, you know, at sea. But a methodology, meaning a practice, that opens us to the experience of our inner lives, that helps to remove some of the distortions that our egos place in front of us. This is what the practice is about. But each person's relationship to truth, which is to the experience of being itself when we're quiet and still, that's your experience. And if you want to be doing something else, you're free to do something else and be here on a Thursday or Saturday night with us sitting here still and silent, and sometimes talking about things that might make no sense to some people, might sound like gobbledygook, but we at least know we're talking about something, even if it's not something of this immediate world. In a little while we'll have the sunset prayer, but I want to introduce at least a subject that we will carry through the sunset prayer. And it has to do with the theme of this month, which is something like, if I remember correctly, prayer, and we can also add supplication or dua in Sufi language, and also dhikr or remembrance. Prayer, is a technique for activating latent divine attributes within our own being. Prayer is a technique for activating latent divine attributes within our own being. Now maybe you've never heard that definition before, or heard it put that way before. But the significance of it is that it's putting the emphasis on latent aspects within our own being. From the larger Sufi perspective, we know that those attributes are instilled in us from an ultimate source. And when we use language, it seems as if that ultimate source is out there somewhere, at some very high state, some absolute, subtle divinity, and that's true. And yet, there's no distance between that divinity and our own being. So it's just as true to say that what's being activated is being activated within each human being. And so for a while I'd like to put the emphasis on that, because all of you in your training, in your study, you've gone far beyond the conventional egoistic notion of life, thinking that you're the complete doer of everything, that you are the center of the world, and that what your ego wants is the most important thing. You've all gone far beyond that, I trust. And maybe we have focused our hearts and our minds, our attention, on the divine reality in worship, in remembrance, in meditation and contemplation. But now we're going to bring it all back to this very heart of the human being, which is like a hidden treasure. Allah says, I was a hidden treasure and I love to be known, so I created the worlds visible and invisible in order that my treasure of loving kindness would be known. But the treasure is more than just one attribute. The treasure is all attributes. It's a whole spectrum of qualities. Some of us are stronger in some qualities than in others. But in the practices that we do, and I mentioned prayer, when we say, oh, Ya Allah, or oh, my beloved friend, awaken in me patience. Help me to embody patience in my life. Or, oh Allah, help me to embody generosity. Or loving kindness. Or justice. Or truth. When we make that call, and especially when we make it in the way of using these divine names in repetition, Ya Fatah, Ya Fatah, O opener, O opener, open me. Allow me to be the key to opening, or let your key open my heart, Ya Fatah. When we invoke the divine name like that, we're awakening something, you might say, up here, in our brain material, we could map it. And the idea is there, the idea of equality, the meaning of that idea. And with constant repetition, it's awakening. It's if we could map it, shall we say, with luminosity, we would understand, we would see that brain cells are awakening just with the meaning. Now, you could be thinking about other things. You could be worried about Donald Trump. You could be, a lot of people are, but we're not. But you could be thinking about money, you could be thinking about food, you could be worried about what people think of you. The mind could be going to all these different things. But if it's coming back to Ya Nur, the light, or Ya Fatah, the opener, or Ya Alim, the all-knowing, then at least part of our consciousness, part of our time is given to awakening something in our own mental system and in our own heart. Because that idea, take any idea, take patience. It's an idea. We have an understanding of what it might be. We might acquire some understanding of that patience, that it has to do with being in a different kind of time than the time we're often in. But also we have patience as it's known in the heart, which is the last of the 99 dhammas, maybe the last one to fully grasp and practice. But to the patient, give glad tidings, as the Quran says. The patient will neither fear nor grieve. It's a beautiful quality. So it's awakened in the mind and in the heart. And with repetition, literally, it goes from here to here, from here to the infinite. And from the infinite back to here. A connection is made between your apparently individual soul and divine being itself, which infuses the already latent quality in you with even more energy. And it is energy, it is light. It is a qualitative light. And if you stay with that long enough, with any name, with any attribute, with the name of God, with the quality of God, you begin to glow with that. That is what you are. And when you begin to glow with it, you emanate it. You become a source for that quality, for that light, for that energy. So this is the work, one way of describing the work that we're doing and that is possible for a human being. And who's to say what quality it is, what attribute should come forth in you? In a way, you can trust your own desires on this. I would like to say you could trust your own desires. Be careful, but in general, what arises in us can be for the good. Our way is not to kill every desire. That's a spiritual pathology, a misunderstanding of what our humanness is. When the heart is relatively pure, when we're not enslaved to the ego and the false self, then what arises is in some sense the will of God, the good that arises in us, the yearning, the wish to do something. Everybody wishes to do something good. You see all these people doing things on the internet, supplying free information and, you know, tracking things. And why are they doing that? They're not getting paid for it. They may not even get recognition for it. But they're all, people want, naturally want to give. And people are basically good unless we're pathologically distorted. So what arises in the human heart, assuming certain basic ground rules, is something positive, something beautiful, something to be nourished. So the qualities that arise in some people are called to the cause of the environment, some to the cause of justice, some to the cause of healing, some to the cause of service, some to the cause of art, literature, music, cooking, childcare, all these things, all of them beautiful. And all the more so when we cooperate with the divine attributes that are latent within ourselves. And the more those particular divine attributes begin to glow in us through that intentional awakening of the meaning of the name in both the mind and the heart, the more that awakening takes place, the more we are transformed, and we're less a cutout personality living from imitatively according to shallow social norms, and instead we become a different kind of person, more creative, more present, wiser, hopefully more generous. Presence is the absolute foundation of this, because if we're not present, then we don't exist. We're just a script, we're just a computerized, we're a program. We're not the programmer. A lot of people are just running on their programs. No spark, no luminosity, no intentionality, no will, no spontaneity, just programming. But with that awakening of presence, then with that presence comes all of these qualities as well. So that's part of the beauty of life. Choose your qualities. What do you want? I was thinking of a beautiful name today. Welcome, Sarah and Cousin. Just one beautiful name that came to me today that I hadn't paid a lot of attention to. And the name is Aziz. Mm-hmm. Aziz. And it's an interesting name because it means both powerful and precious. You know, when sometimes you write a letter, you say, Aziz so-and-so, in some languages. And also the word for eagle is Aziza. An eagle has that, well, something powerful and precious. And well, how interesting that a name of God can have this kind of qualitative nuance and uniqueness. So what would it mean to introduce Aziz into your life? Are you ready for that? Are you willing to be Aziz? You know, it's the quality of a warrior. But it's also the quality of precious relationship. Or last night, a few of us were sitting around and I said, let's go around this room and let's just say, what quality would you like to bring forth? Or what quality is important for you right now? Then someone said, Ya Fatah. Fatah is another interesting one because it means the opener, but also in our language it also means the conqueror. When we say to true conquering, in English it sounds like domination. Like you conquer, you have an army, you conquer a city, and you dominate that city. But in our understanding, which goes back to the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, the futuh was an opening. What was conquered was not for domination, it was for opening into human rights, into freedom, into religious freedom. That's the true conquest. And when Ibn Arabi gathered his great masterwork, it's called the Futuhat al-Makkiyah, the Meccan openings, some translated as the Meccan conquest. But it was a whole series, and it's a huge series of books, but it was all about these insights and revelations that he had in Mecca. Futuhat comes from Fatah, the Meccan openings. So this is another quality, Fatah. What a beautiful quality. And I said, I remembered a hadith of the Prophet that says, and it relates to fatah, and the word miftah is a key in Arabic. So it was, the hadith is this: be the kind of person who is a key for goodness and a lock for harm. So you see, both functions are there. You can be someone who opens things. And actually, it was Salim who had this. And I wanted to say to you last night that I often look to you as the key, especially to things in the material world. If we need something done in the material world, he's the go-to guy. Very often, he has the key to open those things, but also to know what to lock. You know, some things you have to lock out, to lock out harm. Well, the Ta is related to both. So I'm just throwing out some ideas about the richness of divine qualities that can be awakened in our lives and consciously employed. We cannot do enough zikr. We cannot do enough supplication. We can be calling the names of Allah. More and more. We can't say how much is enough or how much, or if there is such a thing as too much. There is a hadith that says, remember God so much that people will think you're crazy. People will begin to question your sanity. That's the kind of insanity that Rumi espoused. He says, I've tried sanity long enough. Now I'll make myself mad. I'll throw self-interest out the window. That's the madness that he followed. Yeah. I'll sip the poison and give the sweet drink to others. All of these qualities, this is our practice. So choose a divine name. Before you walk out the door tonight, if I may recommend this, nobody's going to check up, but before you leave here tonight, don't leave this house without a name that you've chosen for yourself. Perhaps to remember and invoke in the month of April. You'd be doing yourselves and others some good if you do. So we'll come back for some discussion and some music, but it's time for sunset prayer. Some of you know, a week ago I was in Delhi for a week at the World Sufi Forum, where there were a few hundred Sufi sheikhs and scholars and 22 countries represented, but a lot of them from India. On the final day, there was something like 250,000 people gathered in the Maidan in Delhi for the reading of the declaration of 24 points that were written up by the Sufi sheikhs of India to help protect Muslim communities and also to bring more justice and more tolerance and peace and unconditional love into the Indian situation. Prime Minister Modi also came and gave an extraordinary speech, which surprised us all at its magnanimity and wisdom. It was really quite something. And it was an opportunity to meet some old friends and new friends from places as diverse as West Africa, Kazakhstan, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Europe, North America, South Africa, Malaysia, Indonesia, Russia. Interesting people from Russia. Mm-hmm. Natasha, I'll show you the booklet that they gave me. Two very bright young men with incredible Arabic. And from the mosque in Moscow. And they weren't Sufis yet, but they were getting it. They were very sympathetic to Sufism. So we'll have some continued contact with them. So that's where we've been, and plus some several days in London and a couple of meetings there. And, last night, Sidi Ali Alawi, who's a great scholar and was an important political leader in Iraq for a certain period, gave a beautiful talk to our circle in London last night, which was forwarded to me today, and I listened to it, and it was quite a, it was called an explosive talk by some of the friends there. He speaks on such a high level that I wouldn't dare to try to paraphrase much of what he said. But some of what I said in simple terms is partly a response and a reflection to what Sidi Ali said last night, which involves this whole, he called it, inversion of how we understand the spiritual experience. And he was saying very often, in the name of religion, people posit, or religion posits, or religious authority posits an absolute and a perfection, and it's out there. And we are to, in a sense, align ourselves or imprint ourselves or strive for that absolute perfection that's there. There's certainly truth in that. But he was coming, he was emphasizing a different side of the matter, which, and touching it quite profoundly on the Surah Najm, which is a Surah of the Star, and it describes an experience the Prophet had when he came within, as it was said, two bow lengths, which is metaphoric of the presence of God, and what that experience is for the human being, to strive to come to that nearness to the divine, and how that's our task in this life. And it's different for every person, and yet it requires an extraordinary honesty. It allows no personal delusions. It requires this sort of fastidious honesty and awareness and trust in our own, in a sense, our own being, our own experience, rather than according ourselves with some external authority. That was the point of his talk. And but he gave it on a profoundly mystical level. He said as he was leaving, and people were really touched, and our friend, our brother Mahmoud, was there in the dialogue with him and clarifying and some of the Arabic and complimenting Sidi Ali on this, and then he was leaving. He was going directly from there to Baghdad for the reorganization of the cabinet in Iraq, where he has not agreed to play a role in the government as it is, but to be an advisor arranging the government. And he said, and as he was leaving, he said, "Pray for me." And then he said, "No, no." He said, "Don't pray for me. Pray for the oppressed in the world today." That's his last word. So I mean, people of God working in the world at the same time that they're Gnostics, they're Arifs, you know, the main focus of their lives is that spiritual realization and that spiritual truth. And at the same time, there's other work to do, other tasks to be undertaken. Siddhi Ali also came to our gatherings and our the previous week in London. So we had a good amount of time together. So I said a few words. Did I make any sense? Mm-hmm. It's just another angle on something we know very well, which is the zikr and the supplication of the names of God. Does anybody want to try and, you know, paraphrase and give back what you understood tonight, or any comment on it or questions on it? To help us digest this, to make it your own. Pardon me while I tilt my head. I think it's going to look a little strange. Get to clear this ear so I can hear out of it. But I'm starting here. It's wonderful to hear. It occurred to me, last week I lost my smell completely. I've never had that happen. For about 2 days I could smell nothing. It's a totally new experience. It had to do with this Delhi air. And I thought that's kind of a metaphor for something. Imagine, because, you know, the Sufis often talk about the fragrance, you know, of the saints, for instance. Catch the fragrance of the saints. Or catch the taste, the vauk, you know, of inner experience. Taste your inner experience. Imagine what it's like to have no taste, to have no sense of spiritual fragrance. Many people in the world are in that condition. We're in the process of sensitizing ourselves to that fragrance, to that taste, to that perception. Mevlana is a great teacher of spiritual perception. You can look at all of his work from that point of view, that so much of what his message is to help us to become perceptive about the nature of existence, about the true qualitative reality that we're in. So, in talking about the divine names today, what's the connection? What can we do? Seem to induce a state of pure, mindless emptiness meditation when I ask a question like this.
I have a question, maybe I can come from which we're okay. We're talking today about yathātā, picking an attribute to work, and you gave an example of yathātā, and I was struck by this part of the conquest as an opening, and the futuhat as an opening. And, well, you asked that we do not leave this house without having a connection to work for the month of April. But in thinking a bit, been reflecting, there's this part of the word where I have chosen these following words, right? And it says, facing all obedience and disobedience, la hawla wa la quwwata. So I'm wondering if this obedience and disobedience is a bit like this conquest that has another meaning to it, in the sense that when Paul was in the hospital in February, that's my husband was in the hospital in February, I usually, well, or I work more with La ilaha illallah, but what came to me at the time was La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah.
There's no power nor agency but with God.
Moments when, it was a couple of moments when I first felt I'm about to panic, and it's really going to serve no purpose for me to panic. And that was what came up. But I make no sense of it in terms of obedience and disobedience. So I don't know if I'm stuck on the meaning.
Well, this is very simple. I think it's very, my understanding of it is very simple.
Thank you.
But I can give you my simple understanding.
Yes.
When we say there, facing all obedience and disobedience. Mm-hmm. Now, this applies to yourself, and it applies to the outer world and the people in this environment. You see people who are disobedient. By that we mean those who are do injustice and cruelty and corruption and such things. We can call that in general disobedience. And obedience, those who attempt to do the good. We understand that much. We look out at this world and it is not for us to judge people. Individual souls. We can say this injustice is bad, we'll correct it. Illness causes suffering, we will try to heal it. But we're not looking at people and saying, you're bad, you're good, you're bad, you're good. Obedience, disobedience. Why? Because there is no power nor agency but with
God,
the divine. Mm-hmm. So this frees you from judgment, from thinking we're in a position to judge any other soul. That's how I understand it. Facing all obedience, and including my own disobedience. Not that I want to write off my disobedience and blame God for it, no. We can't do that. We take responsibility for ourselves. But we can also be merciful. We can say, you know, yeah, all right, I am disobedient. You know, I give in to my weaknesses sometimes, or I give in to my negativity. And instead of torturing myself over that, we can be merciful and ask a higher power, you might say, for guidance, for grace, for blessing, whatever.
In a sense, almost like taking refuge.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. And even on a cellular level. So it makes perfect sense that that would come up for you in that situation. Because even within Paul's body, there are things that are obedient or disobedient in the sense of following the alignment for health or being askew. And yet it's all serving the higher purpose. So, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah, really.
This is a, let me just add one further remark, and that is, we don't stop seeing distinctions of better and worse, of obedience and disobedience, of right and wrong. Especially as it applies to ourselves. But at the same time, simultaneously with that, we recognize that there is something much bigger going on that we can't fully account for. We can't say what the causes of things are with any with certainty. When it applies to other people, we can't never assume that if I were that person, I wouldn't act that way, for instance. So it frees us from judgment. Judgment is not our department. And there's an understanding in Sufism that we look out at the world with the eye of wahdat, of oneness, and we don't, we see it as perfect in the sense that this is the perfect world for our souls to do the work it has to do. in this moment. But we have another eye, the eye of forekhan, or discernment, we direct to ourselves, saying, no, I could have done better. I could do better than this, and I will try. I'll forgive myself. I'll be merciful for mistakes, but I will try to do better. So two different eyes. There's nothing to complain about out here. It's perfect for what your soul needs to learn right now. Yes, come. Humor me. Give us. Yes.
Can I say something?
Please.
The way I received what you said was that much of my life is spent in passivity to my own life in the spiritual world. One opportunity I have is to struggle with my nows.
Yes.
But what you've offered is something that's beautiful.
Yes.
To engage in something in which you offer yourself the opportunity to experience the beauty of one of the names.
Yeah.
And to be a channel for that.
Yeah.
And to find a place for it in the world, in our world.
Well said. Yeah. Thank you. It's a good reflection of what I was, an elaboration of what I was trying to communicate. It's beautiful. You have a beautiful opportunity always in this human life to activate that hidden treasure. And you're right, it's active, it's not a passive thing. It's an activation. Which comes partly through language, through a sacred language that allows us to name certain qualities, invoke their reality, and in the invocation of these qualities and attributes, the quality and attribute comes alive in us. It may not be immediate, it may not even be apparent to you. Nevertheless, something is at work, sooner or later. It may be more obvious. You may not see your own light, maybe somebody else will. Or you may see the light in others, and it's actually your light. Your mirrors. Rahima.
If I understood you correctly, the names are latent within us. We aren't an empty vessel waiting to be given something.
Right.
These are already here waiting to be developed and completed to our potential. And I find that amazing. There's something comforting in that it's already within us to be realized.
There's no lack in the human being, essentially, except for lack of activation. That's why we say, in thinking again about Sidi Ali's inversion of the conventional understanding of spirituality. As it has also been said by some people in our tradition in a very shocking way, this is not the religion of God, this is the religion of humanity. important. What does that mean? Thought God was all important. No. Human beings more important. Why? Because our greatest experience of divinity is in ourselves and or reflected to us by those who have realized those qualities. Yes, there is an experience, and we may have extraordinary experiences in meditation all alone or on retreat. But very likely somewhere along the line, what got you started, what got you motivated, what got you convinced with sincerity was a contact with a mature human being, a spiritually mature human being, or an exemplar like Rumi or a prophet. So we should never... our tradition particularly is very strong on this, that we have a very high notion of what the human being is and what's possible for a human being. And that also puts a responsibility on each of us to fulfill this.
It also brings me back to our need to turn to our Lord, our Rab.
Yeah.
That meaning of Rab being to educate and mm-hmm. to bring us step by step to completion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's always that. It's never an enclosed system. It's never me alone, separate from all of existence. Well, let's see if we can work with this. Right, Lizzie?
Yes.
Mashallah.